This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Anthers, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, May 23rd, 2021. And today on the program, we'll be talking about WWE going back on the road to touring in front of live fans in July. More details on AEW's new deal with TBS. The latest in viewership in the dark days of the Showbiz Daily List world that we now live in. Don Callis is done as an EVP of Impact. There's drama at New Japan Pro Wrestling. I've got a Google Trends report that we'll discuss. There's a new patent troll lawsuit against WWE. And reportedly, WWE made a lot of money to book the zombies. Seriously. All that coming up. But first, and now, joining us to my south, slightly southeast, in the deep south territory of South Buffalo, New York, Chris Gull joins us to discuss the week in professional wrestling business.
Yeah, it seems like we just did this a couple days ago on the emergency episode that was on the Patreon.
We did.
So, and by the way, if that Patreon, it's only $5. And look, you get surprise shows like that every once in a while.
Yes. We've surpassed 100 subscribers on Patreon now, which I'm very happy about. And we did an emergency episode. We'll talk about some additional details that we've learned since we did that recording on, I believe it was Wednesday. Yes, it was Wednesday, because we went head-to-head with AEW Dynamite on the subject of AEW's upcoming move to TBS in 2022. AEW Rampage, the quarterly specials coming to TNT, and Dynamite moving to TBS, but anyway, check that out on the Patreons. But over a 30-minute, I think it's 35-minute episode that we did for everybody on the Patreon feed.
Well, we're going to start with WWE today, Brandon, and we're going to talk about the announcement that was made on Friday that they will be returning to live events in 25 cities. Only 3 dates, though, officially announced. This schedule is supposed to go through Labor Day, and it's going to debut this July in Texas with a trio of shows. You have Friday, July 16th, SmackDown at the Toyota Center in Houston. Sunday, July 18th, the Money in the Bank pay-per-view at the Dickies Arena in Fort Worth. And then Monday, July 19th at Raw. Then it's an American Airlines Center in Dallas. And all those tickets for those live events are going to be going on sale this Wednesday. And the additional tour stops and on-sale dates will be announced in the coming weeks. Not surprised about Texas being the first. We've kind of also seen that with AEW, mm-hmm. with Texas and Florida. But I haven't, and I know you're the type of guy to do this, I haven't really done it in my math with the calendar yet. Mm-hmm. 25 cities to Labor Day is pretty much just TV tapings and pay-per-views, right?
Here's the rundown. July 16th. Okay. It's one of the first things I did when I read this, as I pull out the calendar.
I figured.
July 16th to Labor Day. That's September 6th. So this is including, so up to and including 16th to the 6th. So Labor Day, of course, is a Monday, as it always is. But anyway, there's 8 Fridays. There's 9 Mondays. That's 17. Okay. This is a math show. So that's 17. Then you figure pay-per-views are monthly. So there'd be 2, maybe 3 pay-per-views. So that brings us to 20. What else could be in there? Maybe some takeovers could be in there. Maybe one
or a garden show,
a Madison Square Garden, like a house show. You think everybody wants to know about house shows? Are house shows ever going to happen again? I don't know. This doesn't shed that much light on it. I think WWE is on the road for good after this. It's interesting that they would announce this as a 25 city tour, as if it's a tour that has a limited release or something. I think they're just going to stay on the road unless there's some sort of setback in the pandemic or something. But so we get up to maybe 23 or something like that by counting all those dates up and including a pay-per-view or two and including a takeover or two, short of 25. I wonder if any of those, you know, what would you say, Chris Cole, are the most important city or cities for WWE to visit in their touring? I have some in mind. I wonder what you think.
I would. Well, we talked about the Garden. I think New York, just because that's home to them still. Mm-hmm. Chicago, traditionally a very, very good wrestling market. After that, maybe Philadelphia. And they actually just loosened a lot of mass mandates on live crowds. So they traditionally do very well in Phoenix, too.
Oh, yep. You're naming some of the major cities in the United States here. But how about those lucrative cities of Riyadh and Jeddah? So I
didn't even think about that.
So I think the big question now is, and I don't know if that's included in this. This is only through Labor Day, right? And that's through early September. So there would still be a number of months in the year before then. But I wonder if maybe not even just one Saudi Arabia event for the government of Saudi Arabia. But maybe they could get two in. Now, it's probably what will have a great deal to do with it is whether or not Saudi Arabia is going to allow people into the country, particularly from the United States. And I found a May 17th Associated Press article that says things like, quote, with limited exception, foreigners from 20 countries, including the US, UK, UAE, and France, remain banned from directly entering the kingdom. Although tourist visa holders to Saudi Arabia remain barred from entry, the kingdom is aggressively marketing its sites to would-be visitors. So I think that's something to monitor, especially if you're trying to make sense of WWE's financials for the rest of the year and trying to predict what's going to happen. $55 million every time they go there. I tweeted something earlier this week, something we've discussed before here on WrestleOmics, that WWE has to disclose the amount of revenue that they get from their customers who contribute at least or more than 10% of their total revenue. And in the past, that has apparently, they don't make it explicit who these customers are, but they quantify the amount of money. And there is in 2018 and 19, a customer that is contributing $110 million in each of those years. Split that in half, that's $55 million. It's got to be the General Sports Authority, a branch of the Saudi government. So that will mean a lot to their financial picture, to the profitability, to their revenues, if they're able to generate an extra 50 or even 100 or $110 million before the year is over. So that's the big thing that's going to affect the EPS that the analysts will make estimates on. And that's something I'll be watching. Texas, if they're going to the Wild West, the Texas where we know there's not as many restrictions on live events. In Florida as well, I would expect some of these events to be in Florida.
Oh yeah.
And I think this is going to be beyond those two states, though. There's only so many cities, for one thing. There's only so many cities in Texas and Florida, as heavily populated as those states are. But I would expect other areas as well. Now, AEW they're going to St. Louis, I think. There's an AEW date for St. Louis. I think that's what it
is. Yeah, but it's the fall, though.
Right, this is way off. This is way off.
Yeah.
But yeah. So we'll be watching that. If you go to WWE's website and look at their live events page, it's only these three events that are up there for now. But I'm sure we'll be talking about that as other cities get announced. It'll be curious to see what the demand is like. So it will be something we might be able to get an idea of by looking at Ticketmaster when these tickets do go on sale this Wednesday. Are they going to be a fast sellout? WrestleMania had its own problems, and there's no hotter ticket than WrestleMania. Granted, that was a little bit earlier on when people may have been a little bit more cautious about going to large public gatherings. And since that time, you and I are both fully vaccinated, and I'm sure that there's similar stories for a number of people in the U.S. About, I think we're over at one third of the country has been fully vaccinated now. So we'll see. You got to yell at me every time I say we'll see, or take a drink every time I say we'll see.
Real quick, I did want to mention, kind of go back to an original point with the touring thing. Now that I start to think about it, tour is just one of those words in their vocabulary that doesn't really mean what it is.
Yeah.
Because they will do that for the house shows.
Right.
There's always the WrestleMania Revenge Tour, the Road to WrestleMania Tour, and the WWE Holiday Tour. And I forget what tour they do in the summer or whatever.
Right.
After the WrestleMania Revenge Tour.
Right. It sounds like SummerSlam. I didn't prepare this, but SummerSlam, I believe, is going to be in Las Vegas. I think we talked about that last time. That's what I expect.
Yeah, that's the heavy rumor. Well, we talked about it to be stored out there, but I think
there's no press release about that or anything.
Las Vegas.
Right. And there's no, again, yeah. the only live events listed on WWE's website right now are those three dates that you just mentioned for, was it Fort Worth, Dallas, and was it Austin?
Houston.
Yes. So by the way, the Saudi events, if they do happen, they have a 10-year agreement, which began in 2018, running through 2027, two events per year. So they haven't done one since February 27th, 2020, just before the pandemic. And Vince McMahon has said on earnings calls that any of the missed events will just be tacked on to the end. I wonder if they could even end up doing events more frequently than twice a year to make up for the dates that they have missed. Because now they've missed how many? They missed a second one that they would have done in 2020. They missed, I would say, by this schedule, they've missed another one by now, probably. So they've probably missed two at this moment.
I mean, as far as the mid markets and small city markets, I don't know if they're going to go back to regular house show touring just for the cost effectiveness of this. But I think it does also help with employee morale. I think if you're telling the guys, because they don't really, I mean, I guess they still get a cut of the house, but it's not like it used to be. So I think if you tell the guys, hey, you do your TV tapings and then you go home, much like the benefits that AEW offers.
Yeah.
I think it could be good for morale if they decide, hey, we're just going to do TV tapings. It may be once in a while, like a Madison Square Garden or something like that.
Yeah, like exactly. In a lot of ways, a business that is so driven by media revenues and so no longer driven by live event revenues, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to do house shows in the way that they were doing them before the pandemic anymore. I know there are, as we talked about before, there are a number of sort of hidden benefits that aren't financial benefits that come with running a lot of shows, including giving people experience. But there are a lot of hidden disadvantages too, like wear and tear, like the otherwise, mm-hmm. Sort of the opportunity cost and the morale by, letting people be at home a few more days per week. But we'll see if they do take a drink. We'll see if they do more house shows. I doubt they will. I think they'll just, that's been my prediction, that there will be certain holiday tours that are especially profitable, but will they be going to these small towns once or twice a year? I doubt it. I think that's over and doesn't make a ton of sense, I think.
Yeah. It'll be interesting if it has the same effect of when Vince nationally expanded in 84, sorry, and all those small towns that they would go to a lot ended up not getting WWF anymore and ended up being the growth of the independent wrestling scene in the Northeast. And I'm interested to see how independent wrestling does,
right,
if this is a true thing, if these towns just don't get WWE anymore.
Yeah. I'm wondering, too, and I've given this a lot of thought, but what's the return going to be like for independent wrestling events now when you've got all the big companies now, WWE and AEW, are returning to events by July? What's going to happen with indies? I know you've been involved with the hype for our local promotion in Empire State Wrestling. When are they going to come back? When is New York going to allow gatherings like that again? I know we've got Yankee Stadium's going to be attended,
Yeah, and honestly, it seems like it's not as tightened as people think it is, but I've noticed that venues still have tighter restrictions. Mm-hmm. I've seen a live show in our area that it's going to be outside, but they're going to mandate masks and they're going to mandate the negative COVID test and all that. But that if you go to a baseball game, that's not the case. If you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask, and you also obviously don't have to have a negative COVID test, and then you don't even have to have any COVID tests if you're not vaccinated. You just got to wear a mask, because mm-hmm. I'm actually going to be going to the Buffalo Baseball Stadium June 1st to see the Blue Jays play the Marlins.
Oh, is that the official
in the vaccinated section?
Is that the official name of Pilot Field now? What I'm
it's at? It, no,
I'm using it's, the 90s.
Salem Field.
Salem, is it really Salem Field? Do people outside
it's named after the hot dog? Yeah.
Is Salem is a national brand, right?
No,
we're talking about hot dogs. Right?
it's acquainted. It's like regional.
Anyway, that is our local minor league baseball stadium. That is because the U.S. and Canada are locked down from each other. The Blue Jays are playing here in Buffalo. What will it mean for ratings?
Yes. Live I think events. That's what you wanted me to ask you. but what will it mean for ratings with a touring schedule now, Brandon?
I think not much. I think it'll be a short-term bump, and then it'll go back to where it was. I know there are that I've talked and I've heard people talk who are, you know, from the sort of the financial analyst community and the investor community, and they're really looking forward to the effect that the return to live fans will have on WWE ratings when there's fans back in attendance, because, and then there's no question, the product is better with people in the seats and reacting. That's what's, that's really the game in my view. But the problem with ratings is the content. And the problem with the content is not just that there's not fans there. It's the execution of the content and the development or lack thereof of stars. But anyway, I think this will have a nice bump on July, whatever it is, 16th. Is that the first Monday? What's the first Monday? You have the thing up.
The first Monday is July the 19th. So they're starting it off with a SmackDown the touring. So it's SmackDown, Money in the Bank, and Raw.
And I'm sure, you know, there's rumors that John Cena will come back for one of these first events back in arenas. It'll be a big deal. And I see maybe it'll even last for 2 or 3 weeks after. And then I see it being right back where it was. I really look forward to, I think there's going to be a new level of game happening once these audiences do come back. And now we've been in this world where Vince hasn't had to face a real live crowd, with the exception of WrestleMania last month, hasn't had to face real live crowds on any consistent basis since March 2020. And I think there's a belief in that company among people who are producing the show, writing it, and performing it, that the audience was in their way. And I think there's going to be in the time since there hasn't been a crowd, I think the audience that's left has probably shed down to become maybe even more hardcore than they were before the pandemic. And I think WWE has gotten so comfortable with not having the crowd there and being able to press the button that makes people chant, "This is awesome," and have people cheer and say, "You deserve it," and things like that, that I think there'll be even more audio manipulation, which I think will further frustrate the live audience and make them more, even though, yes, they're paying to be there, will make them even more distrustful and more willing to give what they know is an undesired reaction.
One thing I would love to see, and I know, Brandon, you're just the guy for the job, is after the first 4 weeks of live shows, like live audience shows for Raw and SmackDown, it'd be nice to see the cumulative 4 week rating of the last 4 weeks before there was no fans, and then the first 4 weeks of fans, and see that comparison.
You can see that comparison a couple months from now at Brandon Thurston on Twitter. We'll definitely look at things like that. Absolutely. Yes.
So moving along, and we're going to get into a little more AEW, as we discussed this past Wednesday on the emergency broadcast, AEW to TBS. And we actually have a note from the PW Insider. And this was kind of what I was referring to earlier or on that show, Brandon, but I couldn't remember where I saw from was.
I had not
the word it making the rounds is that between the switch to TBS, Rampage, and the new quarterly specials on TNT, All Elite Wrestling is receiving in the area of an eight-figure payday from Warner Media. So that is what I was alluding to when we were just talking about it last Wednesday.
Yes. Eight figures.
So what, I mean, any idea on the number, you think?
No. Eight figures, which could be anywhere between $10 million and $99 million. Eight figures. I don't know. I've asked. And when I have asked what the, when I've tried to get some further, I do believe that the length of the deal, and I think Meltzer's reported this, and this is definitely what's been hinted to me, is that the length of the deal has not changed. Keep in mind, this is Turner, a Warner Media company that is now about to work on a merger with Discovery. Who knows whether the people they're dealing with today are going to be the people that they're dealing with a few years from now, or even when the merger is complete a year from now, right? I don't know if that will be complete, but that's when maybe they'll start to merge, right? But as far as what the value or how this changes AEW's TV revenues, it's not very clear to me. I do believe, though, now that any reports that we hear of AEW's TV revenue is not like WWE's TV revenue is guaranteed escalating TV rights fees. WWE knows, I think, it's my belief. WWE knows, at least in the case of Raw and SmackDown, they know what they're going to get, at least for the US deals, the biggest deals. Guaranteed TV rights fees. Really, no matter what the viewership is, they're going to get the same amount. In AEW's case, I believe they have a guarantee base, and then I think there's still ad revenue share that fluctuates. So there's probably some volatility when things like 2020 happens and there's a pandemic and the ad demand decreases. So I think that's happening. I think there's, when Tony Khan says $175 million over 4 years, which breaks down to an average annual value about $44 million, I think there's probably about a 10% plus or minus range that might vary within based on various incentives, including the sharing of ad revenue on Dynamite. So, yeah, I don't think this represents a change in the amount of time. I think the current deal will still expire in December 2023 with a one-year option on Turner's part to extend it if they want to. I think they probably will because this seems to be working out well. and I think, yeah, again, one possible factor in the deal not being extended in time is just the fact that there's a merger on the horizon. Yeah, and as far as getting a specific value, I would imagine the quarterly shows represent some sort of increase in payment. Does Rampage include some sort of increase in payment? Maybe, but again, when I've asked, I've gotten an answer to the effect of,
yeah, but we're not comfortable getting into that level of granularity.
Okay. That's our new soundboard. That's our new soundboard. I made that in Python. But yeah, Rampage, by the way, will be mainly a taped show, usually produced in conjunction with Dynamite, with the exception of weekends that are next to a pay-per-view or next to weeks. This is a Friday show. And on weeks where they're doing a pay-per-view on the weekend, Rampage will be live. So not going to be a weekly live program. That could change in the future if it does really well or if the right person decides that they want to go live. But it would be very expensive to have two TV productions every week. So it's much cheaper to do this. And I don't know what's going to happen as far as where the Dark and Dark Elevation stuff is going to be taped in the future. I believe there's discussion within AEW about whether or not they're going to continue to go to Daily's place and produce matches that way, maybe to produce some of that YouTube content. So yeah, those are my beliefs.
I kind of like that idea because, so we all know, obviously, the Performance Center tryouts for WWE, they bring everybody down, and they're not having televised matches, but they're bringing everybody down and this and that. It'd be interesting if that's pretty much what AEW did, was every week they bring people, or every other week they bring people to Daily's place that they want to kind of take a look at, extras, and then they have some of their roster talent to have matches.
Which is, quite honestly, like, probably the, not only is it cheaper to do that rather than doing a Performance Center and doing this whole bureaucratic tryout system where you go down to the Performance Center and we try you out and then maybe we sign you and then we warehouse you for a while. And I don't know that that makes sense. And I think that creates this great bureaucratic structure around everything that makes everything seem so holy and magnificent as you work your way to grab the brass ring toward the main roster. But wrestling is this star-powered performance, and I don't know that doing what WWE does is either the most cost-effective or it's just simply the most output-effective way to do things. But anyway.
Similar AEW-related note, but we're going to go to the merger that did happen with Discovery Plus and Warner Media. And we actually have something from the Sports Business Journal with a media research firm, Moffitt Nathanson, predicted that Discovery will move key Turner sports and news content to Discovery Plus, and that will make it a broader and more attractive offering, which will help their ability to grow those more valuable impressions. So interesting prediction that when this merger goes through, that Discovery Plus will be putting sports content on there, which is interesting because it's, I think, the one field that they really don't have. Mm-hmm. And I'm very familiar with Discovery Plus and all that, so we can get into that in a minute. But I'll let your thoughts first on sports and Discovery Plus.
Yeah. So that's merely a prediction by an analyst firm, research firm, Moffitt Nathanson. I know I listened to the Lightshed podcast this week with Rich Greenfield and Brandon Ross, and I forget the other guy's name, but another really great podcast that people could listen to try to understand the media business. But Rich Greenfield predicting that Discovery Plus will be gone in a year, and that maybe it'll all just merge into, I don't know, HBO Max or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know. The point is to think about, does this present a situation, or is there a final destination here for AEW's pay-per-views? Is there some sort of streaming deal for AEW at some point in the future? And would there, where they land, probably somewhere in the same family as their current TV partner. I think the long-term game of AEW is to sell to Turner or whoever their major business partner is at the time, probably Warner Media, or I guess Warner Media is basically going to go away, and they're merging into Discovery. The CEO of Discovery is going to be the CEO of this thing. Who knows what happens to Jason Kilar, who's the CEO of Warner Media? But yeah, this is going to be Discovery. I don't know if the Warner Media branding is going to go away or what. But anyway, I think the long term game of AEW is to continue to make it very valuable, and maybe to consider selling out to a major media partner, like maybe it's Discovery at this point. This is far future, though. So if AEW were to do a streaming deal, that would be in some ways similar to what UFC has done with ESPN Plus / Disney, to what now, right in their wrestling space, WWE has done with NBC Universal with Peacock. Again, the WWE and NBC Universal deal for the WWE Network content, and the biggest piece, the pay-per-views, is $200 million average annual value. The demand for AEW content is a fraction of what it is for WWE content of the same kind. We're talking about pay-per-views, right? 1.1 million subscribers in the U.S. is what the WWE Network was able to get. And we know that AEW just did their biggest pay-per-view ever with the Exploding Deathmatch, with about 125, maybe 130,000 buys. Higher price point, for sure. So it's not a one-to-one apples-to-apples comparison. I'm talking about $10 subscriptions versus a $50 price point. So, I don't know, maybe say 200,000, maybe 300,000, to be really ambitious, is their ceiling of demand. So, and then think about the fact that, too, when we're making the comparison between AEW streaming value and WWE streaming values, that WWE has an enormous tape library, which I would, you know, take a guess that maybe that's worth 20%, 25% of that value to Peacock. AEW comparatively has virtually no library other than their own history at this point, which is only 2 years old. And the weekly show is less than 2 years old. So if there's a, but I think you could probably make an argument that, you know, if a Discovery or someone else in the streaming world were to make AEW an offer of, you know, $20 million per year, maybe 30, something like that, that's probably worth it to AEW. They're probably only make, and especially if it's a US only deal, which Discovery is only a US service, I think, right now, or maybe predominantly US, not global. I look this up the other day. It's not global, at least. So again, maybe $20 million is sort of a threshold where it starts to make sense, because in the US for pay-per-view, AEW is probably only generating, if they're only doing four a year, it's probably only generating $7 million per year in pay-per-view revenue after the split, and considering the number of buys that they do. So that's something to consider in the future. I think eventually that will happen. There will be a streaming deal.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting. Discovery Plus doesn't currently have any live streaming stuff. What it is mostly educational based, as I brought up before. It's nature. It's unscripted television. It comes to the world of cooking and home repair and house gardens. And they're doing a network switch over that's launching January 2022. They're taking their DIY network and turning it into the Magnolia Network, which is pretty much a network based around the stars of Fixer Upper. Chip and Joanna Gaines, a whole network. I mean, there's going to be shows that they're not on, but a whole network based on their brand. So I feel, you know, you brought up the comment earlier from Rich Greenfield, having it all be one thing. I don't know about that, because I think keeping it separate, you're also going to get two incomes instead of just one streaming service. subscription. Now you have two subscriptions coming in, but I think sports can add to that. Maybe some documentary style programs, especially if they acquire Warner Media. I would believe CNNSI would be involved with that. Like maybe some documentary style programming, maybe, you know, like I said, some specials, you know, pay-per-views for, for AEW, or even the stuff they were doing, like the Road 2 stuff. That's the type of stuff I could fit on that. But they haven't done any live sports, but that's a programming I could see, more sports educational. But the live pay-per-views obviously would be an attraction.
Yeah. So what we're kind of talking about here is whether or not Discovery continues to exist, or whether it's bundled into HBO Max. This is something I've thought about. And in some ways, this resembles what happened with W Network, sort of W Network being bundled into Peacock. And this is something I think about sort of, you know, sometimes as far as we do a Patreon here. And you know, some people say, well, eventually somebody's going to come along and bundle all these Patreons together of a like product. But I don't know that there's that those products bundled together produces a greater demand or produces greater revenues for everybody once they split up the revenues again and then redistribute it. At least in the case of wrestling Patreons, I think the followings are sufficiently small, but yet the audience is sufficiently passionate that everybody's going to make more money. And certainly true now, but I don't see it changing in the future, at least not the near future, that, yeah, everybody's going to make more money by it all being segmented like this. And, everybody getting exactly what their demand is. You know, there's little question here too. Now we're just talking about my own business here, but there's a little question here too. Now that I know I'm getting what I deserve. So I don't question whether, I'm contributing all this and they're only giving me that. You know, I know that this is what I attracted. We got 100 patrons and I've earned these, and you know, I know exactly what the demand is, and it's specifically toward our content. I don't think that when you bundle more of these services and more of these products together, that it increases the demand. I think if we've got 100 and somebody else has got 500, if we were to band together, I don't know that we have a lot more than 600 now, you know. But yeah. So anyway, I think why did I go through this? Because I think if you bundle Discovery and HBO Max together, do you end up with in aggregate a bigger subscriber base than you had separately? I'm not sure.
I think, you know, they're so different that people will actually probably have subscriptions to both. HBO Max, you get your premier HBO programming, your superheroes from DC, your movies, exclusive movies from HBO. And like I said, Discovery, it's educational. It's almost like they call it the married channel, because it's a lot of home and garden and cooking and stuff like that. So I think they're two separate entities that people would have interest in both. I have subscriptions to both.
Do you?
Okay. How many of me is out there that you would be cutting down?
Yeah. And I think the other opportunity is like, if you've got something where maybe there's just this sort of threshold casual interest in the kind of content that say Discovery Plus has, where you do have, maybe you do have a lot of people who are borderline interested in HGTV, Food Network, etc. type content. They're not quite sure if they want to spend whatever it is. Is it $5 a month? $10 a month? What's the price point?
Yeah, it's let's see here.
Goal is going to check his credit card. Automatic. But maybe if you bundled it in with HBO Max, which let's say I'm not a subscriber of yet, but I'm also considering, okay, you've taken two products that I was on the borderline of and you combine them and you haven't doubled the price, you know, you haven't combined the price. It's the bundle of those two products together, but it's at a price that's lower than the price of those two products separately. Then maybe I buy. And I think there's a better argument for that in more mainstream entertainment, I guess.
$7 without ads, $5 with ads. I actually have an interesting question for you. We talk about bundling, and I saw this on Twitter, and I really wish I could remember the person that tweeted it so I can credit them. Not my original idea. And it almost seems maybe an unrealistic scenario, but if Discovery Plus wants wrestling content, right? They want wrestling content on an AEW hit. At that point, we'll have a few years of library, but still nothing crazy. Would they be looking into possibly purchasing a tape library from an Impact Wrestling or that of the ilk? to just add more wrestling content.
Yes. Well, I had a conversation. I just happened to have a conversation with someone recently about this. And I think the price that companies like Impact or their parent company, really, Anthem, would want for their library. How is Impact monetizing their library right now? It's on Impact Plus for however many subscribers they have. Probably not a ton. And they're putting it on Pluto. And Pluto, we know from the 2017.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Discovery of, or at least it's an exhibit in the GFW lawsuit between Jarrett and Anthem over the rights to GFW. Part of that, there was some sort of business model. So these are not financial reports of what had happened in the past, but it was a business model of sort of forward looking. This is what we expect to make. And at that time, 4 years ago, Pluto was paying them just under, I think it was somewhere around $800,000 for distributing their content on Pluto. So the price that it would cost to acquire the library would probably be several million, maybe the low seven digits. What's the demand for that library on if it was distributed on the widest basis? I think the demand for the WWE library was a couple hundred thousand subscribers. And maybe that's a good business, but Peacock bought out that business. Okay. But If the W Network library had a demand of in the U.S. of a couple hundred thousand, I think globally of a couple hundred thousand subscribers, what's the demand globally for content like Impact, Ring of Honor? It's probably a fraction of that. You know, it's probably a tenth or maybe a fifth of that, right? So I think we're getting down to the lower power to the funnel here, where it's more like the Patreons, where there's a passionate enough audience that is also sufficiently small and not sufficiently large, where it just makes more financial sense to cut this up into isolated pieces where people will pay all sorts of money for it in all different places. I don't know that you make more money by bundling together the AEW library and the Impact library and the Ring of Honor library and whatever, the IWTV library. I think the best way that those are to be monetized is piecemeal, I guess is what I'm saying, rather than together for $10. Because I don't think there are all these people, I don't think there are a sufficient number of people who are sort of borderline on those products, but they haven't quite gotten them. But if you put them together, boom, you double the demand. I don't think so. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to the ratings report for the week. Brandon, you have been so due diligent. They are still down at Showbuzz Daily. We don't know if they're coming back.
Hashtag and yet you're still pray for Showbuzz Daily. Actually, we only have the big four programs this week. If this goes on much longer, I don't know what we'll do. We'll try to work out some alternatives, a solution. We'll see what I can do. But every day that goes by, my hope fades a little bit more. We might be about to enter a post-Showbuzz Daily world. It's a dark thought, but it might be the case.
Well, the good news is that WrestleNomics is the light through that darkness. So we'll find a way. We always do. But we'll kind of go with the ratings here. SmackDown, this is from Friday, May 14th, did a little over 1.9 million with a 0.44 in 18 to 49. Significant drop from the week before that did 2.2 and 0.65 at 1849.
Not just down from the week before, but the lowest rating on Fox. Okay, the FS1 episodes were like under a million. Okay, so not comparable, but the lowest SmackDown on Fox in the Thunderdome era.
Wow, that is that's very, very interesting there. And what do you think it was?
I don't know. It's May. They just
is it just summer. Yeah,
it's May. Ratings are always down in May sequentially. I think you just did a nostalgia episode that did a big rating. I wonder if those nostalgia episodes remind people of how it's not as good as it used to be. I wonder if there's a little bit of an effect of that. it's the content. If you want ratings to be up over a long period of time, and I know, God, SmackDown is better than Raw. I've heard. But develop new stars. That's how you draw money. That's how you boost the ratings consistently.
Well, even though there was a pretty big drop off with SmackDown, Raw pretty much stayed the same. 1.8 million overall. Well,
we have the overnight, which I might be able to tell you off.
Oh yeah, what is the over?
So we were talking about SmackDown.
Yeah, that what's the overnight of the SmackDown?
A week from this past Friday, but this most recent Friday, the rating appears to be slightly up according to the overnight. The overnight is, I think it's reading something like 1.81 million, which is down from the number that we just said. But the overnight tends to be a couple hundred thousand or at least 100,000 lower than the final. So this would, by comparison of the overnight for the one that we just talked about, which is the lowest in the era of the Thunderdome, this would appear to be slightly up. But we'll probably get a final. We'll get a final rating to talk about next week.
So the overall audience did not change the same on Raw, doing a 1.823 compared to the 1.820. So not much of a difference, a 3,000 viewer difference. But the 18 to 49 took a little bit of a drop, 0.48 this week compared to 0.53. So the people were there. They just got a little older.
Yes. Down 10% from last week in 18 to 49. Yeah. So I would expect viewership to decline in May. We've got one more week to go, and then we'll talk about some monthly averages. Yeah.
NXT pretty much staying where they were, 700,000, same numbers as the week before. In 1849 was 0.15 compared to 0.17.
Yes. So, I mean, you can't blame NXT. And, you know, they were going head to head with AEW on this night. So you can understand why they were only 700,000 viewers.
No, that was the past, Brandon.
Okay. The NBA playoffs, though, are happening right now, right? That is the latest scapegoat.
Play-in games.
The play-in game.
Yep.
The Lakers and Warriors was on at 10. They opposed AEW Dynamite, which we haven't talked about yet. But the playoffs are happening. Were the playoffs happening on Tuesday? You're the sports fan. I rely on you to know these things.
I know. I think Wednesday was actually the first play-in night.
Okay. So there weren't any playoffs on Monday or Tuesday to oppose Raw or NXT, is what you're talking
about. I don't believe so.
Okay.
But I will segue into the Dynamite rating here. You talked about going against the Lakers Warriors playing game. 821,000 overall, with a 0.28 in 18 to 49, drop from the week before, which was 940,000, and a 0.31 in the 18 to 49. So this is kind of similar to the numbers that they were beating NXT with every week on a consistent basis, the 800,000 area. Will this be where they live, like you like to say?
Yeah, I think so. The NBA playoffs aren't going to end, though, until what? June, July?
Usually, traditionally July.
So. July.
Yes.
So I don't remember the NBA playoffs having this much of an effect. And we're only in the early part of the playoffs, not when things get, I guess there's just more games happening. Is that a factor? Are there actually more games? See, with Showbiz Daily, we're so in the dark now. Like, I don't know what did rank number one and beat out AEW. But all of these numbers, especially if we look at our report here with the gauges, all these numbers are well below in the system of the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, which you can get access to at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You look in the report tab, you will see the gauges, and you will see the WrestleNomics O-meter reading that all four of these programs are well below what they were doing in the median of the previous 4 weeks. So all these numbers are down quite a bit. And in the case of WWE, maybe it's partly a seasonal post-WrestleMania fallout. In the case of AEW, maybe it's the playoffs for the NBA, which were on ESPN on Wednesday night. The big game, though, the Lakers and Warriors, was on at 10, not at 8. Did not oppose AEW, but there was some other NBA playoff game that was on ESPN at 8 that was opposing Dynamite.
So NXT did go opposed with the Eastern Conference play-in games.
Okay.
It was the Western Conference. So they did have NBA that they were going against.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you when the NBA finals will go to in a moment. It looks like it will end July 22nd. This is the furthest it will go. Yep.
So any low numbers between now and then, we can blame on the NBA finals or the NBA playoffs. It's not the fault of the content. No, I don't know. At some point, it's whether or not people want to pay money to see what you're putting out, or if they want to spend their time. So.
We're going to move to the World of Impact, which we don't have a rating for this week, but we got some information that we've been talking about on this show as far as Don Callis and Fightful. The great people at Fightful have confirmed that Don Callis is no longer an executive in any capacity with Impact Wrestling and Anthem Sports and Entertainment. So something that we touched on probably was going to happen based on his being removed from the website. And here we have it. It's official, well, at least from Fightful. Impact has not announced anything yet, but Don Callis, no longer an executive with the company.
Yes. Do we know what Don Callis was doing in the time between ECW and Impact? He's working for the government in Canada or something like that?
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, I know at some point he did some random... At one point, I think he did work for TNA at one point, too.
Sounds right. Anyway.
I remember some interview with him and Russo going head-to-head or whatever. Yeah.
I would expect Don Callis to show up in a corporate role at AEW sometime in the next year to be safe.
Any other thoughts on that, Brandon?
No, not really.
Here's one thing. It'll be interesting to see if this Impact AEW relationship continues after with Don Callis departing and once this Kenny Omega world title angle ends.
Yeah. The Forbidden Door has been helpful to Impact to their ratings. I guess, how long do you want to be dependent on another company that is stronger than you? I guess is a question for Impact to deal with. And is it the appearance that if this happens, like I think it will, that Don Callis will end up in some sort of office role for AEW? Is it the appearance that they scooped our EVP out from us? Or maybe is there some reason why Impact maybe did want to part ways with Don Callis?
Maybe. If you could only see our faces, folks. So much drama going on, and we are of course on the Voices of Wrestling network and on their flagship podcast. They discussed some stuff going on in New Japan. Brandon, Gaijin Mutiny was one of the stuff that was talked about. Basically, the Gaijins, They, which are all the foreign talent, they are not happy with kind of the way the practices have been in New Japan as far as the quarantines and adding dates. And they're not really getting those breaks between tours as they did before to go home. And then one source said it's not just a Gaijin mutiny, it's a roster mutiny. So doesn't seem like sunshine and rainbows in New Japan right now, according to the rumors and rumblings.
So New Japan, because of COVID is getting worse in Japan. At least the death rate per capita is way lower than it is in the United States. Of course, you got the pressure from the Olympics coming up. Whether or not the Olympics are going to happen, probably going to happen still. But anyway, but touring was stopped and postponed. Sounds like some wrestlers were on their way home. And then they decided, nope, touring's back on. Come back. IWGP title has been vacated by Will Ospreay. There is debate and differing beliefs about to what extent he is actually injured. It sounds like New Japan has to run these shows because their business, unlike these businesses in the U.S., wrestling companies that have now converted their revenue so much to media revenues, to TV revenues and streaming revenues and things like that. New Japan is still a slim majority of their revenue is from ticket sales. So to keep their business going, they really have to continue to put on these shows. They already went from March 2020 to July 2020, running no shows whatsoever. Don't know that they can sustain another long down period like that. Some of these cards that they're advertising look pretty stripped down in terms of the talent that's still available between the people that they've got in the country and the people who don't have COVID and or are not quarantining because of COVID at this point. A number of wrestlers have COVID now. But yeah, that's what's happening with New Japan. People are not happy, apparently. By the way, you should subscribe to the Voices of Wrestling Patreon to get the full details of their written report, written by international renowned journalist Joe Lanza. And you can listen to them talk about that as well on the latest flagship on this very podcast network.
To tie it all together, just to make it WrestleNomics-y, for lack of better terms, if there is a mutiny of, you know, foreign talent, including American talent and British talent, and less people want to go over there because the way they handle the situation and guys leave makes it a lot harder to sell a deal to an American television station with not many American talent on it.
There's no shortage of American wrestlers who want to wrestle for New Japan, though. I think there are people who have leverage, like Will Ospreay and Jay White. But there is a large pool of very talented wrestlers who are whatever U.S. descent or U.K. descent, who are very talented. But that, you know, there's a lot of good wrestlers who I'm sure would be glad to wrestle for New Japan. And if they were presented well, could turn into good stars and at least good mid-carders for them. I accidentally got pen on my green screen.
So now
I'm doing right now, if you're wondering.
we will move on to the WrestleNomics Patreon that has the full detailed Google Trends report, but I'm sure you're going to give us a brief rundown, Brandon, on what is trending in Google Trends.
I really think that this is more of a reflection of name recognition. This is not necessarily a reflection. We'll talk about this because I've broken this down into people. We're going to talk about companies as well, but I've ranked who's being searched for the most. And then I ranked whose search volume has increased the most over the last month. Right. So this is looking at the last 8 months, September of last year through April of this year. I did not try to tackle May in this. I'm only going to deal with full and finished months. So this may be something that I'll look at on a recurring basis when the months end. But anyway, you don't have this in front of you, do you? I don't want you to.
I do not.
Okay. Who do you think is... Did you look at this already?
I don't know.
Okay. So who do you think is the most Googled for wrestler associated with AEW? Person, let's say. It's not just wrestlers here.
With AEW?
Yes.
Sting.
He is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in April.
Wow.
Take another stab at it. The most Googled, most searched for... This is globally, not just in the U.S., but globally. That's not a hint, by the way. It's not as if it's some international, non-U.S. person.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to guess again. We're going to say John Moxley.
John Moxley is number 1, 2, 3 in April. There is still someone who has twice the web search volume of John Moxley or Sting.
Will it be The Big Show?
The Big Show is the correct answer, yes. A little bit below The Big Show is Chris Jericho. Substantially below Chris Jericho is John Moxley, followed by Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega surpassed Sting in April. He was not ahead of Sting in March. And I'm just going to run through the names quickly. Sting, Matt Hardy, Jim Ross, Dustin Rhodes, Miro, Jake Roberts, Tainara Conti, Cody Rowe. What's that? What?
No, I mean, I know. I was like, oh, wow. She's like number 9 or 10.
Yeah. She's been growing. She's been growing in web search volume. Cody Rhodes, The Young Bucks, Christian Cage, Orange Cassidy, Chris Statlander, Britt Baker, Anthony Ogogo, Taz, and Jake Hager. I only did the top 20 here. Let's go to New Japan. The most searched, not just in Japan, but worldwide, the most searched for wrestler. This is a neck and neck battle here, but the most searched for wrestler for New Japan in April.
Let's go Kota Ibushi.
Kota Ibushi is the correct answer. Followed narrowly by Jushin Liger, who is no longer an active wrestler. Tetsuya Naito, Will Ospreay, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kazuchika Okada, Shingo Takagi, Taichi, El Desperado, Minoru Suzuki, Sanada, the international superstar Yuji Nagata, Bullet Club, Hiromu, Kenta, Leo Rush, I'm counting the strong people in this, Tomoyuki Oka, which is also the Great Okan, Evil, TJ Perkins, and Fred Roser, the former, what was his name in WWE?
Darren Young.
Darren Young. Yes. By the way, we're, I never know what the terminology is to describe this, but I'm using topics. So think of it as a bundle of searches that Google, in its algorithmic wisdom, determines is related to this person, brand, place, or thing. That's basically how Google Trends works. So we only get relative search volume here, too. We don't get the actual number of searches. Probably have to pay Google the big bucks to get that kind of info. But this stuff is free. And what I did was I created a Python script where I'm able to... You're only able in the traditional interface to pull 5 at a time. But I've created a Python script that will pull many more in an efficient manner. Was there more I wanted to say about this? We still have to do WWE, I know. But yes. So I did there are so many wrestlers in WWE that there's like, I had to do like 300 of these to get the WWE thing. But who is the most Googled for WWE associated personality? Keep in mind, there's a lot of WWE associations out there. Who is the most Googled for WWE associated personality in April of 2021?
The Rock.
The Rock. There is one person with more Google web search in April than The Rock.
You're talking about wrestling related or just in general?
WWE related.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Now, picture yourself, Golo. I know you don't have hair. I barely do. Let's say you're in a barber shop. What wrestler would that barber bring up to you?
Hulk Hogan?
No. You totally missed my joke here. It's Bad Bunny. It's Bad Bunny.
I get it, though.
Yes. Okay. So Bad Bunny.
We were still in WrestleMania time with April. Yeah. Yes. That's why I wasn't. Yeah. Yes.
All the months in the past, though, on this chart, Dwayne Johnson is number one. Stop me when I get to a wrestler who's actually on W television on a weekly basis. Bad Bunny, Dwayne Johnson.
Okay.
John Cena, The Undertaker, Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns.
Ah, there you go.
Roman Reigns. Steve Austin. Stop me when I get to one again. Steve Austin. Hulk Hogan. Triple H. Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton, there you go. Sasha Banks, Paige, Kane, Mayor Kane, Alexa Bliss, Charlotte Flair, Nikki Bella, another one's not there, Edge no longer there, Rey Mysterio, and Bray Wyatt. Those are the top 20.
So these trends are going to be, I actually am really excited for your May report because we have started to have the biography series. So you're going to see Randy Savage searches and even these Sergeant Slaughter searches from Most Wanted Treasures and stuff like that. So I know when I watch like a historical program, I tend to search the topic a lot on Google. And it'll be interesting to see. I expect Shawn Michaels, especially after that biography, to be probably pretty high up when it comes to in the May trends.
Right. So we should talk about growth as well, but yeah, there is a big bump in Randy Savage in the week between May 2nd and May 8th. So you're right. Yeah, there is. but often, especially on Twitter, I get randomly tagged by people who are arguing, strangers, of course, who are arguing with each other about who's a draw, who's not a draw. And I think this ties in nicely with Showbiz Daily and why this is such a crisis for this wrestling media community. But people want to know who's a draw and who's not. And I think Google web search is not an answer, but it's the closest thing I think that we have to an answer as far as name recognition, which is a lot of what what determines somebody's, or is a good predictor of somebody's economic demand. Google web search is pretty close. Now, not every Google web search is one of economic favor, but it's a good hint. And I think it's a lot better than trying to unpack quarter hours or trying to unpack a whole program's rating and attribute that to someone's star power or lack thereof. Quarter hours are marred by commercials. They're made difficult to analyze because there's other people on the program with you. Wrestling matches tended to maintain their audience better than interviews and other kinds of segments. So I think wrestling ratings, if you're trying to figure out who's a star and who's a draw, which I think is sort of usually a bad faith question. But I think Google web search, at least we've got a metric here that is dedicated to a person and is not in this messy, messy bundle with the positioning of and the competition of what else is on TV at the same time and the commercial placement and the segment placement, etc. So I think Google web search, which is not free of its own problems, is less of a problem in terms of analyzing somebody's actual star power than, for one thing, television viewership. We don't get individual merchandise sales information. PWTs is a good source, so maybe we should spend more time looking at that. The growth. I'll just talk about real quickly the growth stuff here. I question whether or not the growth information really means that much here. There's enormous growth for one Anthony Ogogo, which does make sense. The nature of Google web search data from Google Trends, it's difficult to handle, to say the least. The biggest growers for AEW are Anthony Ogogo, Michael Nakazawa, Chris Statlander, Eva Leese, and Chris Jericho. The biggest growers. This is month to month. This is comparing April to March. For New Japan, it's Tom Lawler, Toa Hanare, Yuji Nagata, Nick Miller, Dick Togo. For WWE, it's Wesley Blake, Tom Phillips, big draw, Kona Reeves, Billy Kay. Were the releases in April? They were on April 15th, in fact.
Yeah.
Think of it. But yeah, that's it. That's all I've got to say about the Google web search for now.
All right. We have a new WWE patent lawsuit, if you want to get into more detail there.
Yeah, not a lot to say here, but just really briefly, there's a company named Sitto Mobile that is suing WWE for patent infringement. This appears to be what is known in some circles as a patent troll. If you search the Recap database, which is a database of lawsuits, you will find Sitto Mobile suing other companies, including Hulu and Flow Sports, over their streaming video technology, which Sitto Mobile claims to have a patent on. The complaint is out there. I could share this notebook this week with patrons if you want to read the complaint. It is quite lengthy, but from time to time, there are these patent troll lawsuits that don't really seem to go anywhere. So I don't have either the expertise to unpack this very much, nor does it seem like this is going to go much of anywhere. So something to be aware of, but I leave it at that.
So the big talk of the wrestling.
Are you aware of this? I just heard about this the other day. Yesterday.
The big talk of the wrestling world before the big AEW TBS news was zombies showed up on WWE's pay-per-view this past Sunday. And well, there was a justification for the zombie attack in the zombie lumberjack match, as it was confirmed by Figure Four Weekly Online that Nick Khan made the deal worth more than $1 million that led the zombie lumberjack match. And that was for the Army of the Dead movie coming out. Yes, zombies, but they were very profitable ones. And it looks like they used a lot of Performance Center guys. I did see one Joe Gacy in zombie makeup.
Yes.
During that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I mean, they got a lot of flack for it, but they probably don't care. So looking at the bottom line of what it got them.
We got F4W Online saying this is worth over $1 million. Right, that's what I found in the notes, right?
Yeah.
I asked someone to try to confirm that, and nobody knows. I don't know. Let's say it is worth that much. Maybe it is. Maybe you want to promote this is on Netflix, I think. This Army of the Dead, starring Batista. Mm-hmm. You can watch that later, Gull. Give us a review for that on the Patreon. So let's say they did get $1 million in revenue for that. And you know, there's long lines of things that Stephanie has talked about in terms of how they can present to advertisers and business partners all these great opportunities, great activations where they integrate your product with our product. And that's what people really want. They want, you know, they want things that don't disrupt the program, and they're integrated right into the content. Even Ryan Satin didn't like this, the zombie lumberjack match. For those who aren't aware, I did catch parts of this on WrestleMania Backlash. So it was a tag match, right? Was that what it was?
Yes.
It was a tag match. Thank you. Yes.
Not a tag match. I'm sorry. No, it was Priest versus Miz.
Okay.
Morrison was involved. Yeah, no, it was that. It was Priest versus Miz. And it was announced as a lumberjack match. And that's all it was announced as.
The zombies were not advertised.
They were not. And then all of a sudden, the lumberjacks were these zombies that were coming out of nowhere. And they actually, every time they were going to be the outside, they would attack Miz and Damian Priest. I mean, these were zombies that were not heels or faces. They were just attacking anybody in their ways. And then at the end, when Miz lost, the zombies then came in the ring and they fed on him.
Okay. Is the Miz dead now? Is that how he's selling the injury that I've heard he has? So this was criticized across the board, including among people who usually love things that W does, that these other insatiable, miserable people usually dislike. So there was revenue here. I think there's expense here, though, too, for doing this.
I mean, you're talking monster makeup and stuff like that. I mean, that's not cheap.
That's not what I mean, though. I'm not just talking about the physical assets. I'm talking about this is an expense on their brand. I heard somebody say on another podcast, not a wrestling podcast, that, you know, a brand is the function of the quality of the products and services, the communication, the effectiveness of the communication, the timeliness of it, and the behavior of the leadership and the talent. And this is something that affects the quality of your product. Is it worth $1 million to you to do this? I hope so. I think it's another thing among a world of things that makes people not enjoy and not as excited to watch WWE the next time. So I don't know.
The timing of it was great, since the report came out maybe just a week before that a WWE executive said that Blood and Guts set the business back 30 years. Yeah. And then you have this zombies.
Yeah.
So with that, we're going to put a dead end to this episode, but it will continue to be living throughout your podcast airwaves again next week. Mm-hmm. See what I did there? I tried, yes. Try to zombify it.
Very clever.
but let's do all the plugs before we end out here.
Mm-hmm. You can subscribe to WrestleNomics on Patreon at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You'll get access to lots of locked posts, including primary reporting, original analysis and research, the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, which includes over 15,000 data points. It is updated continuously throughout the week with viewership for all in-ring programming, even through this dark time where we are without Showbiz Daily. I will still be updating it to the maximum extent that I can. That is there for all patrons. And on occasion, you get emergency podcasts like the one we recorded this week. If you want to hear our extended thoughts when we had just learned the news, on the day that we learned the news that AEW is moving to TBS, if you're wondering why we didn't talk about that much on this episode, it's because it's on Patreon for all our subscribers, just $5 a month. That's there. You can go to WrestleNomics.com and read more of my written work and lots of resources and numbers on the wrestling business. You can follow WrestleNomics on Twitter at WrestleNomics. Do you have plugs, Gullo?
Yeah, I mean, just myself, Chris Gullo, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. As things are starting to open up, starting to appear at more wrestling shows and live demonstrations, as well as comedy. And I'll actually be re-announcing my first mixed martial arts event in almost 2 years coming up soon. And then the Rediscovering the Indies podcast. Check us out, RTI Pod on Twitter, and Rediscovering Indies on Facebook and Instagram. We've had a great growth in that podcast over there. So anybody who listened to this podcast and went over there, thank you. And XPW has been the XPW episode. We just released part three last week, where we discuss all the drama in Philly, and then, you know, and they actually bought, well, they leased the ECW arena, changed it to the XPW arena, and only ran like two shows after it was named the XPW arena, and then canceled the lease because why not? But so we get into all that, and I know there's other crazy topics from that episode that just that my mind's not coming to right now. And then part four will be released in June, and that will be mostly about the trial and the the reunion attempts, and what is there a future for XPW? So we'll be getting into all that, and then we'll go into normal 1 month topics after the deep dive of XPW is done.
So. If you need any help looking at finding legal filings or something, let me know. A good audio quality podcast too, I will say. Matt Long does a great job producing that.
So, well, thank you.
So check that out. Okay, I am Brandon Thurston. You can follow me at Brandon Thurston. Who are you?
I am Chris Gullo.
You can follow him at Chris Gullo.
At Chris Gullo.
We'll talk to you next time.